Hi, I'm Steve Goldstein, and this is the Friday Newscap podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode.
Good morning. Welcome to the show here on KJZZ 91.5 in Phoenix. I'm Mark Brody.
And I'm Steve Goldstein. Coming up, we'll hear from the owner of a vintage store who set out to find the stories behind the items she's selling.
And former NBA player Paul Shirley on his debut novel.
But first, it is time for the Friday Newscap and some voices from the news this week.
Calling us racist and playing the race card does not match our motivations. It doesn't characterize our motivations. And I am sick of the name calling.
The people that look like me and the people that vote like me, this is going to hurt us. And what do? We ignore it. And we continue to push this stuff forward. It is irresponsible. So you get zero sympathy from me if you're outraged.
This would simply utilize the council that already exists and require that council meet at least every 2 weeks in public, right? Because I think it's important to provide some transparency so that the legislature, so that the public is aware of the issues that are being discussed and the determinations that are being made based on that information.
If there was business before the council that needed to be discussed, we would have a meeting.
And with us to talk about a push to change how Arizonans vote, a bipartisan effort to require the governor to hold emergency council meetings and more, are Chuck Coughlin of High Ground. Chuck, good morning.
Good morning, fellas.
And Julie Earthly of Earthly Uncuffed. Julie, good morning to you.
Good morning.
So, Julie, let me start with you on sort of this general mishmash of proposed changes to how Arizonans vote. Before we put it in context of the rest of the country, what are you thinking about when you hear some of these things and how they're moving through the legislature?
Well, I'm not surprised. This has been a concerted effort by Republicans really since the very end of legislative session in 2013. And if you'll recall, way back in 2013 was when the Supreme Court gutted basically the Voting Rights Act, which allowed states like Arizona to make changes to voting laws that didn't require a preclearance by the federal government. And so since then, there has been this concerted effort to try and make it harder and harder for certain voters to cast a ballot. So I think this is just a continuation of that. I think it got ramped up because of what happened recently with Arizona turning blue at the very top of the ticket. This has Republicans worried. And so there is now a more concerted effort to get these bills lined up and passed by the governor.
And Chuck, just a moment ago, we heard that exchange between Senators Ugenti, Rita, and Quesada in terms of going back and forth. And even Quesada later said he didn't necessarily think that the Republicans had bad motives on this one, but it's going to turn out poorly if these advance. What are your thoughts?
Well, you know, Julie and I differ a little bit on this. I see Arizona as having a fairly great track record in my lifetime out here in creating access to the ballot. One of the first states to do all, you know, absentee balloting without excuse, so vote at home. We've had, with no excuse, we've had all mail elections in municipal elections. We've had registration that you can continue to register up to 30 days before the election. So we've had, you know, yeah, we still have our challenges. But shipwrecked and all this, you know, I call it mouth breathing that Republicans are doing right now about, you know, the stop the steal, that's not helpful. It's not a helpful narrative going on. But let's back up a little bit and say there's a balance between openness and access and the opportunity for fraud. I've never witnessed outright fraud in an election. I've anecdotally seen ballot harvesting that's concerned me. That continues to concern me in some places. That I've seen that utilized in elections. Some of the stuff that Republicans have offered in this cycle are fairly ridiculous. Other ones like Ugenti Rita's bill that talks about cleaning up the voter rolls. I mean, you don't want absentee ballots rolling around out in the universe that haven't been used. The judgment call there is, okay, how do you clean up the permanent early voter list? These are ballots that get mailed every cycle to a voter that's requested them. And she's proposing to clean up who haven't voted in the last two cycles. That would mean primary or general, that you don't get automatically get a ballot. That may be too severe because she's including just primaries, and we know primaries and generals, but primaries are only, you know, club elections. That's 30% of the electorate. I might go back three general elections and say, if you haven't voted in three and use two presidentials there, that might be a reasonable thing. It does include like 126 to 200,000 voters that would be removed from that PEVL list. But again, you know, how do you balance that with ballots just floating out in the universe that aren't being voted and aren't being accounted for?
Chuck, when you talk about Arizona's record and reputation of having open elections in terms of like good access, you know, no excuse absentee, early voting, that kind of thing, does that sort of come into conflict, though, with some of the proposals that are out there in terms of, for example, reducing the amount of time people have to vote early and make it so that your ballot has to be postmarked before, you know, the Thursday before Election Day, and requiring some voters to like photocopy a utility bill to put in with their early ballot to verify who they are? Does that sort of conflict with the reputation and the record Arizona has had?
Yes. It's not, those aren't good ideas, Mark. And I would hope the governor who has stood up for the integrity of Arizona got through the process would handle those in a negative manner because they're not helpful.
Julie,
additional requirement is not smart.
Julie, let me ask you about what Steve had referenced, the back and forth between Senators Ugenti, Rita, and Quesada. And, you know, I wonder if there's a parallel to be drawn here between some of the arguments we heard recently at the Supreme Court about the ballot harvesting law, in terms of the bills might not have and probably don't have, you know, the motivation of affecting certain people necessarily. But if in the real world they have that effect, is that still worth considering in the process of debating and voting on a bill?
Yes, of course. That the short answer is of course. And that was the whole point, of course, of preclearance, was to check in advance with the federal government to say, okay, well, what is the end effect of these restrictions? Do they, you know, unnecessarily target certain groups of individuals? And so maybe it's not your intent, for instance, to target younger voters, those, you know, in particular who are college aged. But if that is the effect of what you're doing, then I do believe that that can be considered discriminatory. So I think that that's important when we keep this in mind about what these laws are really doing. I think it's very easy to say, listen, this is just about cleaning up the voter rolls. We don't want these ballots hanging around. But what is the effect of doing that? And by and large, it means, as Chuck had indicated, it means more than 100,000 people kicked off the voter rolls temporarily. That's not a good thing.
But they're not kicked off the voter rolls. They're eliminated off the permanent early voter list. And so that's a distinction. They still would be registered. They'd still get it. They just wouldn't get a ballot mailed to their house. And to the point about, you know, moving locations, you know, look what Adrian Fontes did during the pandemic. We had a really hard time finding locations to conduct our elections. So he had to centralize voting locations. I remember that when we had to do all that stuff through pre-clearance, and I don't discount what Julie's saying. Sometimes there are unintended consequences, but, you know, having regional voting locations that are open 30 days before the election gives people a massive amount of time to exercise their franchise and to access a polling location. You know, we're doing fewer and fewer precinct votings anymore where you have to vote in your precinct, though that is subject to some legal issues right now. But, you know, it's a balance here. And I hate to hear when everybody just plays the race card or plays the, you know, there are significant issues here to make sure our elections are conducted well.
Well, Chuck, let me give Julie a question, though. This is going to sound like a fastball down the middle, I'm sure. But So, Julie, Representative John Kavanaugh said to CNN, "Not everybody wants to vote, and if somebody is uninterested in voting, that probably means they're totally uninformed on the issues. Quantity is important, but we have to look at the quality of voters as well, or votes rather, as well," end quote. So we all know John Kavanaugh says things, but what does that say to you?
That says exactly what I think the intent is for quite a few of these legislators. Maybe not all of them, but it does appear to be that the majority of these legislators are looking purposefully to make it more difficult for certain voters to vote. And those certain voters are those that tend to vote for Democrats. That's a problem. And I would just like to say to John Kavanaugh, he's talking about quality. Maybe we should be talking about the quality of our legislators. And maybe instead of making it harder for voters to vote, we should be making it harder for folks who spread conspiracy theories and lies and don't like to deal with the facts to get into office. That, I just would throw that out there as an idea for Mr. Kavanaugh.
Yeah, I think that's a regrettable statement that he made. but I would point out that Mr. Kavanaugh is elected from LD23. It has a 19-point registration advantage for Republicans and a 22-point participation advantage for Republicans. So when we all think about, you know, districts and who gets elected, let's remember where John Kavanaugh is getting elected. It's not a competitive election. He wins his primary and he goes home and that's the end of the show.
Chuck, is, you know, we hear so much about the idea of somebody's, quote, saying the quiet part out loud. Is this an example of Representative Kavanaugh doing that?
Like, spoken like
do
a
you
true
get
father.
The sense? Right. Do you get the sense this is like this is a prevailing theme in the GOP caucus at the Capitol?
Capitol, Mark. I heard it in the Supreme Court arguments were a week ago. The RNC lawyer,
right?
Man, I cringed with some of the stuff he said. You know, of course, it's a you know, this is about an advantage, and we're going to take the advantage. I mean, a sober look at elections ought to be yes. Let's do everything that we can to help get involved and elect their franchise. Let's also remember that we're people. And we have a history of cheating at elections. And given the opportunity, there are people on both sides that will cheat. And we don't want to undermine the credibility of our institution here. So it's a take a deep breath moment and let people like Kavanaugh say foolish things. Let, you know, Democrats say foolish things. But let's keep our eye on the ball of what we're trying to do here.
Julie, in terms of the bills that are moving through the legislature, Chuck referenced a couple that he hopes the governor will take the veto pen to. If you're a Democrat, is that sort of the hope at this moment? I mean, is there any chance you think that these bills don't actually make it through the legislature?
Well, there are probably a few that won't. To be totally honest, I don't see the governor vetoing these bills. And I think, in fact, he's indicated that he's open to some of these changes. So I don't know that that's a hope for Democrats. And in all honesty, I think Democrats' biggest chances in defeating these come at the national level. And I think that's actually where Republicans may need to be a little cautious, because as they continue to push these bills that make it harder and harder for people to vote, it puts a lot more pressure on folks like Kyrsten Sinema to reconsider her stance on the filibuster so that perhaps H.R. 1 and the John Lewis Voting Rights Acts can pass the Senate. So that could be an unintended backlash for these Republican legislators.
Our guests today are Julie Earfley of Earfley Uncuffed and Chuck Coughlin of High Ground. Julie, let's continue for a couple minutes related to voting situations here, and that included dumpster diving at the Maricopa County Recorder's Office. Does this play into some of the things we've already talked about, just this feeling of stop the steal and the big lie, and is this what's leading to this sort of thing?
Yeah, of course. I think this is a direct result of the actions and in particular the words that state legislators have used to try and convince people that there is something nefarious happening. And it does have dangerous consequences. We have a situation now with the dumpster diving. I don't know what will happen with Stacey Burke. Apparently there's video of folks trying to break into the center. And so, you know, I, it's kind of like what happened on January 6th, right? Like you can't continue to say inflammatory things and assume that people won't take action based off of those inflammatory statements. We really need our elected officials to be a lot more careful about what they're saying. And now is the time for them to stand up and say, enough is enough. This, you know, we're going overboard versus continuing to, you know, to basically silently approve or even sometimes not silently approve of these actions.
And Chuck, we already asked you about Representative Kavanaugh, so forgive me in advance to ask you about Senator Sonny Borelli, who is speculating that high-level people want the Senate's investigation and the election to go away. Apparently he doesn't even trust Attorney General Mark Brnovich. Is this just more of the same, and should people be concerned about this rhetoric?
Well, to the allegations of the fraud, Julie's right. If somebody really believes that, file a lawsuit. We've seen those lawsuits get rejected, or make a criminal complaint. That recorder's office responded instantaneously with a bulletproof response to all of those charges. And, you know, Mr. Borelli gets elected in a district that's 35%, you know, turnout advantage. It's Mojave County. And, you know, it's the age of the internet here where, you know, people used to say things and nobody would pay attention to them that were outrageous. And now, you know, people say outrageous things and it becomes a headline. And, you know, that's what's going on here. And I know Sonny Borelli. He's a Marine. He's a good guy, but he's just wrong about this. And it's disappointing. And we were talking the other day about, hey, we got to go talk to Sonny because it's just not right what's going on and undermining the confidence with such outrageous allegations.
Chuck, let me ask you about another issue that is moving at the Capitol. This is dealing with gaming, new gaming compacts, the introduction of sports wagering. It seems as though the governor has negotiated a deal with the state's Native American tribes, but nobody really seems to know what that deal entails. And, you know, a number of lawmakers are concerned about that. How valid a concern is that, especially from lawmakers who are already maybe a little stung from not being involved in any of the COVID stuff over the summer?
Deeply concerning. I mean, this is, you know, I've seen three once-in-a-lifetime generational wealth transfers happen in Arizona. One was the original gaming compacts. And so your listeners understand the Native American communities, in order to do Class 3 gaming, that was deemed necessary because we have a lottery here in this state. If we didn't have a lottery, we would have no right to do Class 3 gaming. So that happened. It was a very troubled road to get there. The voters narrowly approved these compacts last time, and it is a big deal. It's a lot of money. It's an even more amount of money now that gets transferred in. And as you said, Mark, nobody really knows what it is. Legislators can go up and look at the compacts and read them, but they are secret documents by virtue of these are sovereign nations that are insisting on sovereignty and secrecy here. That's okay for them. But then the governor wants to use this time to expand gaming to these sports bets and these sports books, which are now legal under federal law. And so we need an agreement on that. Well, he decides to hand out the four licenses. This is his plan, to hand out the four licenses to the four major sports franchises here in the Valley for free. You know, these are multi-million dollar opportunities to make money every year. I would think that might be worth looking at. So, you know, Democrats and others have said, well, you know, let's fund teachers in Title I, you know, in our poorest district. Well, here's a perfect opportunity to do that with a lot of money that comes in. But, you know, he's just doing this and then the money goes to the general fund. It's an enormous question, and it's surprising how little attention it's gotten down at the legislature and how little people understand it. But it you know, it's a once in a lifetime. The governor has the seat at the table because he has the right to sign the compact. It also, as we decided on last time, it went to a vote of the people. And I would suggest, you know, if the Democrats and the Republicans and the legislature
come to an agreement on this, it'd be a great idea to refer it to the ballot and let the people decide. I would think if they all agreed on what needs to happen here, it'd be a great deal. But this, the secrecy of this is really bothersome.
Julie, Chuck referenced potentially leaving a lot of money on the table in terms of the licenses for sports betting. That seems to also be a concern among a number of lawmakers, especially Democrats, but not just Democrats at the Capitol.
Yeah, there's a lot of concerns with this bill. I mean, first, I would say that the tribes deserve updated, and I have no problem with expanded gambling and compacts for them. That is not my concern. My concern is what it is tied to. And it's tied to what I think is a really bad deal for the rest of Arizona. These licenses are not, the fees for these licenses are not being set by the legislature. The legislature, in fact, is, I think, abdicating its duty and allowing it to be set by the Department of Gaming. So we have no idea how they're going to set those fees. They could be $1,000. They could be $20 million, which, by the way, is not considered outrageous based upon some of the licensing fees in other states. We also don't know how much they're going to tax the revenues. We know that it could be, it has to be at least 8%, but perhaps it's 30%. We don't know. We're talking about a lot of money potentially coming into the general fund. And when have we ever had a situation where we have a sin tax that isn't dedicated, that isn't earmarked to something? And I personally believe the reason that the governor wants this money in the general fund is this is a way for him to offset massive tax cuts. And of course, a lot of those tax cuts are going to go to the very sports owners who are getting gifted licenses, in my opinion. You know, so it's such a raw deal for Arizona voters. And this is where I think Democrats need to speak up and say, listen, we want the tribes to have new compacts. Those need to be approved. But this other thing that you've attached to it, no, we need to negotiate on that.
That's certainly why that secrecy, as Chuck mentioned, is such a concern for so many people.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
Oh,
go ahead, Chuck.
Well, I can sympathize with that. I mean, it was one of the things, and I have a long history with this. That's why I don't have clients in this space anymore. But that's one of the complaints is that I get it. The Native Americans want tribal sovereignty and secrecy to their business arrangements with the state. But this is a public space that involves off-reservation gaming now. And I believe there needs to be more transparency and people need to understand that's what the People's Chamber is for. Again, the governor can sign these compacts unilaterally. He doesn't need the legislature to do this. Yeah. If he thinks it's the right thing to do, sign it, be done with it. And then the people can see if they want to refer it, or I doubt that'll happen because who's got the money to go fight these interests, but he could sign it all by himself. And yeah, that would be a lot.
Julie, let's shift topics. We got a few minutes left in the segment. Representative Ann Kirkpatrick announcing today she's not going to seek re-election. She's been a member of Congress from a couple of districts, also as the Democratic nominee for U.S. Senate. Redistricting, we have no idea what that's going to look like for quite a while. How big a deal is Kirkpatrick's retirement?
I think it's a really big deal. I wouldn't be surprised if you saw several legislators from Southern Arizona who want to throw their hat into the ring for this, perhaps even, Tucson Mayor Regina Romero. I think there's going to be a lot of interest in that race. Of course, again, as you said, we have to figure out where those lines are drawn. Anytime you have that kind of a vacancy for Congress, you have a lot of shifting around and a lot of folks who are in other offices who suddenly go, oh, well, that now may be the time to throw my hat into that race.
Chuck, is this a domino effect kind of situation?
Well, it's pretty crazy because we're going to have an open seat anyways, right? Because we're going to get another congressional seat by virtue of the redistricting. And now we're going to have another open seat. And as we all know, the margin in Congress is super slim. So as you know, the Senate election last time, and Senator Kelly is up for re-election this time, and we're going to be electing a governor. So it's pretty crazy that this will cause that kind of, crazy mouth breathing in politics. As Julie said, everybody and their mother's going to be looking at seeing where this district is. I mean, she was one of her district, Congressman Kirkpatrick's district is today one of the two swing districts that are close in registration. So if it continues to look something like that, which I presume it will, because it has to take in that southern Arizona part of the state, or at least should, that Cochise County, folks, places down there in eastern Arizona, it's still going to look a pretty swing district. So very interesting. God bless her. What a life story she's had. Ups and downs and different. But she's got grandkids now. So God bless her. She has a right to hang out with them.
Julie, how important, I mean, obviously any seat is important, but will this be one that you would anticipate national Democrats in whatever format this district ends up looking like? This is one that national Democrats will really have their eyes on to try to maintain?
Most definitely, because as Chuck mentioned, there are just, you know, small the Democrats right now just have a small majority in the House. They need to hold on to that majority and hopefully pick up a few seats in the next election. And so this is going to be one that they have their eye on. They already have their eye on Arizona, by the way, simply because of changing demographics, because of the fact that this is a state that is now purple. And so I think with Kirkpatrick's seat being open, it really will just mean that we all need to prepare ourselves for another onslaught of television ads and radio ads.
Just a little bit of money coming in.
There's going to be, exactly, a lot more money coming into the state.
Chuck, in our final bit here, one more name we want to bring up is a name that probably a lot of people in Arizona didn't know until some of these, the COVID press conferences that the governor was holding for a while, and that's Major General Michael McGuire, who's going to retire next month from his position as the state's adjutant general. Is he a U.S. Senate candidate? What should we know about this? Or is this the fact that he has military experience that people throw that out? Or is this actually a possibility that he could survive a primary against members of Congress, for example?
Yeah, he's so a little background on the general. He took over the Arizona National Guard when Governor Brewer appointed him after a pretty scandal-ridden period for the Guard. You haven't heard anything about that since then. He's a graduate of the and he's done a great job of cleaning up the Guard here in Arizona. Very credible guy. People have always talked about him maybe being a candidate for higher office. I think people have heard him talk about that. So I suspect that's a real thing. Being new to the game is probably helpful because he hasn't said a lot in terms of having to compromise, you know, himself with the Trump wing of the party and the more business-friendly part of the party. The more, you know, moderate wing of the party, if that still exists. So pretty good candidate that might be able to survive a Republican primary. But if Andy Biggs or somebody else like that's run, it's going to be a very difficult primary. So it'll be interesting if they can exercise some institutional discipline, which we haven't seen a lot of lately, to create a path for him to succeed.
Chuck Coughlin of High Ground. And also we had Julie Earfley of Earfley Uncuffed. Guys, thanks so much and stay well.
Thanks.
Have a great weekend.
You've been listening to the Friday Newscap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's big stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. If you have any questions or comments, please email us at the show@kjzz.org. I'm Steve Goldstein, and thanks for listening.